There's a part of this week's parsha which is not spoken about so much. In fact, in ancient times, on Shabbos, when the Torah was read, they would read a verse, then they would read the Targum, they would read the Aramaic translation that people understood. A lot of people didn't understand Hebrew. And there was one portion which was Nikras ve'enei Liturgemes. It was read, but it was not translated. And that was the story of Yehuda, the fourth reading of Parshas Vayeshev. I'm not going to claim to be able to do any kind of justice to this reading in the next couple of minutes, but we're going to at least analyze one detail to see how everything is very, very exact and precise. The basic message or the theme of the storyline is that Yehuda had children. He married, he had children. He left his brothers because they blamed him. They blamed him for the sale of Joseph. They said, if you would have spoken up, if you would have gone to the wall, we would have listened, and you didn't. So they blamed Judah. So Yehuda, in shame, ends up leaving his brothers, marries a woman, has a family, goes into business, loses his wife, and then he tries to marry off his children, and then loses two of his children. So Yehuda is really a very bereaved man. He's buried a wife and two children, grown children. And his daughter-in-law, who is an extraordinary woman by any stretch of imagination, in many ways, he's not very happy with what happened here because he lost two sons, and he kind of blames her. Although it was the son's fault, not her fault. They sinned, she didn't sin. So he sends her away. He says, like, why don't you have a nice life? But she says, but you have a third son. And this woman, Tamar, is very righteous. She desperately wants to become part of the Jewish people. She wants to bear children to Yehuda. So he says, Tamar's too young. Shelah's too young. Why don't you move on and we'll see. But really, Yehuda is not fully fair to her. He doesn't have the courage to tell her to her face that I will never, ever allow you to marry one of my children again. And she leaves thinking that she's going to marry the third son, which is a Levirate idea, where if one dies, the brother steps in. And I'm conflating a lot of stuff very quickly, but this is the time limitations we have to deal with. So she realizes that Yehuda is not going to be giving her a hand in marriage. He's not going to marry another son, and she wants to connect to Yehuda. So she dresses as a harlot, and she seduces Yehuda, basically. And she wants to have children with Yehuda. And she does get pregnant. And when she gets pregnant, the message is sent to Yehuda, hey, your daughter-in-law has been fooling around. And Yehuda says, shh, fooling around, that's awful, terrible. Oh, really? So bad, he says, that she should be tried in the court of the day. So she sends artifacts, collateral that she had taken. And she says, Hakana, maybe you recognize these things. Maybe maybe you know who this is. Because that's what I'm pregnant from. And Yehuda takes a look and he says, this is, remembers the story. And he said, Satki Himeno, she's more righteous than me. She's right. I was the one who played the games. I disallowed her from continuing her life. I was the one who refused to allow her into my family. And Yehuda becomes kind of like a Levirate stepen. And in the end, at least according to one opinion, Yehuda remains with Tamar for the rest of his life. That's the story in a nutshell. Obviously, very strange story. It doesn't fit into our typical frame or metaphor of what we think a tzaddik should look like. Although the Gemara says, Kol Ha'imer, Yehuda Chata, anybody says that Yehuda sinned in a very typical or classic sense, is actually making a mistake. That would not be fully correct. Okay. So let's analyze some details over here. Chapter 38. We're going to take a look at from verse 17 onward. Verse 15, actually. Vayirea Yehuda. Yehuda sees Shelah, Tamar, she's positioned herself in a place where she's going to be noticed. Vayachshavei Alazaina. He thinks that she's just somebody who's engaging in the oldest profession. Ki chisifonah, because she has covered her face. So usually harlots are not known for covering up, but quite the contrary. So why does he think she's a Zayna? Because she covered her face. So Rashi says, V'yachshavel a Zayna, l'fi she'yesheves, v'parosh hazdrochim. She's sitting there at the roadside in the manner of the day that That's where people used to do this kind of thing. That's where they would pick up business. But on the other hand, she covered her face. The la yachal liraisa, he couldn't see her well. Ula hakira, to recognize her. Because if she recognized her, she would know who she is. Umedesh abeseinu, the teaching, the expounding of our rabbis is kichisa faneha kishahoisa beis chamel. She was very, very modest in her father-in-law's home. Haisa tsnua, and she was so modest. Lefikach lechashta, he said, that girl is kind of familiar. Ah, it could never be Tamar. Because Tamar was so modest, so discreet. Anyway, vayet eleha el haderech, this bereaved widower, sets off on the way. Vayemer havana avay elayich, he says, prepare yourself so, you know, we can cohabit. And the Torah says, ki lo yada ki chalasahi. He didn't know that it's his daughter-in-law. So presumably, if he would know it was Tamar, he would never ask her to cohabit, because Tamar has this bad luck. Everybody she marries dies. And since two sons died, Er and Onan died, that's because they behaved inappropriately. But he doesn't know that. He thinks that she's a dangerous lady. Marry her, your days are numbered. So he doesn't want to marry her. He would never come close to her if he knew who she was. And she says, Vataymar, she says, Ma titen kitave eloi. What will you give me? You want to be with me? That's nice. I'm going to cohabit. Like, what are you going to give me? He says, Va'ayemer anoichi ashalach gedi izim. I'll send you a kid goat from the flock. Min hatzein, from the flock of sheep. Va'ayemer, she says, Im titein a ravain ad shalachacha. That's nice, but you have to give me some collateral. I can't just, you know, assume that some guy from the roadside is actually going to keep his word. So if you're going to give me some collateral, which means I'll be able to collect my wages, that's fine. So she says to him, Vayomer mo ha'aravain asher etin loch. So what would you like? What are you looking for? Vatoymer, she says, Choysamcha, your seal, ufsilecha, and your cloak, umatcha, and your staff, asher biyodecha, that's in your hand, vayitein la, and he gives it to her, vayave aleha, he is intimate with her, vatarle, she becomes pregnant to him, or from him. And then, she immediately disappears. Vatakam, she gets up, vatelech, she goes, vatasa tzi'ifa me'aleha, she removes her costume, Vatilbash bigdei amanusa, she goes back to wearing widow's clothing. Yehuda, in the meantime, is not exactly proud of what just happened. So he sends a kid goat, biyad re'ehu ho'adulami. He sends it in the hand of the Adulamite, his friend. He says, whatever, don't ask no questions. Just find this lady over there and give it a goat. And what happens? And he says, collect my collateral, miyad ha'isha, from the hands of this woman. V'loi matzah, he wasn't able to find her. She was nowhere to be found. V'yishlos anshe'am mukoyma, he asked around, le'mereyak desha, where's that harlot? Hibei na'im, who's here on the roadway side. And they said, v'yemer le'hoysa b'zekadesha, we don't know what you're talking about. This is nobody's corner. Nobody hangs out here. So he comes back to Yehuda and he says, I couldn't find her. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. They say there is no such person around here. So she says, Vayem Yehuda, all right, fine. Let her have it. Let's get out of here before this turns out to be a big source of embarrassment. And that's basically the story. The rest of the story is that, as I said, Tamar is taken out to be judged. And she says, oh, it's from this guy. And she sends these items to Yehuda, Hakerna. Do you notice? Do you recognize? Do you know what this is? Okay, so what was the collateral? We're going to talk about the collateral damage here. So Yehuda sustained collateral damage because he never got his collateral back. Now, what did she ask for? And why was she so sure that he would come looking for her? So Rashi says, first of all, in Eiravain, verse 17 in Rashi, Eiravain is a mashkin. In the language of the Mishnah, it's called mashkin. Eiravain is Hebrew, Mashkin is Mishnah Hebrew, which is slightly different than the biblical Hebrew. And a word we're more familiar with is collateral, but Eiravain, that's what it means. It means actually surety or security. So you go check into a hotel, take a security deposit. Why? Not because the hotel is $200 a night. So why do they slap on $500? Security deposit, just to make sure you don't do anything crazy. So here, this was like security. He provided security as if to indicate, don't worry, I'll be back to pay my bills.
That's not a Hebrew word,
Erovain? Erovain is a Hebrew word. In the Mishnah, it's usually referred to as mashken. In Hebrew, in biblical Hebrew, the word that's used is more like security. In Mishnah Hebrew, it's more like collateral. A mashken is collateral. So what was the collateral? Rashi says, Chaysamcha upsilcha. If you look in Unkelus, Unkelus says, Iskascha v'shoy shifach, which this is, Hatabas sha'ata chaysimba, the signet ring that you wear, that you sign. So in those days, people didn't have a fingerprint recognition. And they didn't necessarily have a pen. They could just do a signature. So how would something be yours? You would emboss on clay your seal. And everybody had a ring, a unique ring. And everybody had that ring and they would press it into the clay. The clay would harden. That would be your seal. So the tabas, sha'ata chesimba, the ring that you use to make the impressions, to make your seal. So this is like your fingerprints. Because everybody had a unique ring. Everybody had a unique signet to sign, so to speak, ratify it as who they are. It's like accountants or lawyers today have a seal. Each seal is unique and different. It can't be impersonated. Right? Put it in, clamp it shut on the paper. So that's like a modern example of the old kind of seal they used to have. V'simlascha sha'ata miskasaba, and the cloak that you cover yourself with. That was the things that she asked for. It's interesting that in the Mefarshim, when we talk about the Eravain, there's a lot of discussion about this, what exactly it was. Like Rabbeinu Meyucha says, those were the three things he had in hand. A person didn't leave anywhere without a signet ring. He's obviously wearing clothes, and he had a walking staff. That's what he had. So she said, give me what you have. But in that case, it doesn't have to be chaysamcha sha'ata chaysimba. Just say your ring. What's the difference? And what is this idea of psilcha? He says, simlascha sha'ata miskasabai. The clothing you wear, as in contrast with the clothing you don't wear. What's the difference in clothing you do wear and clothing you don't wear? Give me an article of clothing. Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam says that the reason he took these three things is because he wanted to be certain. She wanted to be certain that it would be easy to identify him. So one object doesn't really say anything. The person lost an object. But if you happen to have all three things, I have his driver's license, I have his watch, and I have his iPhone. That's pretty impressive. That's like a serious Geneva. Like you, if you stole all three, that says something. So the Avraham says when there'll be a bunch of different things, like a walking stick, an article of clothing, and a signet ring, that will be most effective. The Moshe of Zakenim, the Bali HaTosfa, say that the ring here is reminiscent of the ring of Kiddushin. Tamar knew Jewish tradition, and she said, give me a ring, because she wanted something, she wanted it to be like a Kiddushin. She wanted it to be like a marriage. Now, the idea of the psilcha, of the garment, the Medrash Lekach Tayyip says this was all sheep-related. There was a sheep seal, or a way he would emboss the sheep, or tattoo the sheep. That there was a psilcha, a rope he would tie the sheep with. And there was things that would use, like a stick that he was used to guide the sheep. It was all sheep-related. But Rashi doesn't accept that. Rashi says this is all personal artifacts, personal stuff. The Balaturim and Kliyakar, they talk about tefillin and tzitzis. They said that the seal, the signet, that's the tefillin, and the garment is the tzitzis. I think the reason Rashi doesn't say that is it's very, very, let's just say, far-fetched to imagine Yehuda would give away his tefillin. Maybe a signet ring, okay? Is tefillin he would give away? Give away his tzitzis? That sounds a little bit much, but he does seem to give away personal artifacts and effects. And the question is twofold. Number one, why does Rashi go and use these? Why these items specifically? is there a special thing? Is this like Rabbeinu Miucha said? Whatever. She said, you know, give me what you have in hand. And also, Rashi uses her circuitous language. He says, Tabas sha'ata chaysimba, simlascha sha'ata miskasaba. The ring you sign with, the clothing you wrap yourself in. He doesn't even explain the matcha. He doesn't, they just leaves.
Of course, Yehuda gave it on the premise that he was going to get it.
Yes, of course, Yehuda gave it on the premise that he would get it back. Understood, but I still wouldn't give my tefillin to anybody for anything.
Even if there was a Shimon and Levi in front of you? Even if there was a Shimon and Levi in front of you?
Yeah, I'm going to tell him that. So page Reshud, this is very interesting how the Rebbe analyzes this and explains to us the seemingly circuitous language that Rashi employs. And we know that Rashi is very sparing. So Tzarek Bia, the Rebbe says, similar Lamed Aleph here in Parshas Vayeshev. Number one, Madua Nokat Akosov Beloshen Remez. Why did the Torah use opaque language? Chaysamcha Upsilcha. If a chaysam is a tabas, if a sign is a ring, if a psilcha is a simla, is a garment, then why not just say it that way? Why does the Torah use code language? The Torah says Chaysamcha Upsilcha, just say Tabascha. These are our Hebrew words. Tabat is a Hebrew word. Simla is a Hebrew word. So why do you have to use words that nobody's familiar with? So much so that Rashi has to give you the typical words so you know what it means. If it means something ordinary. So if it means something unusual, like Baal Turim or Baal Chliyakar saying, okay, that's why the Torah uses unusual words. That's why we have like Psil, Psilcha is like Psil Tcheles, Vahayla is like language of Tzitzis. Or Chesamcha is connected somehow to the idea of tefillin. Okay, fine. But according to Rashi, if it's actually ordinary things, why don't you just use ordinary language? Why shift from the regular words? Why adopt unusual verbiage that needs elucidation and interpretation? Number one. Number two, according to Rashi, what is a chosam? What is it?
A signet ring.
He says, Chesamcha sha'ata chosam ba. The signet ring that you sign with.
They didn't refer to it as chatam.
What's the easy way to say it? Instead of saying chaysamcha, sha'ata, chaysam ba, instead of saying the signet ring you seal with, just say
your ring.
Or a ring. We know it's his because that's the story.
Like, is there one that
so say signet ring.
So what is the Hebrew word?
Chaysamcha, sha'ata, chaysam ba. The signet ring that you use. Just say signet ring. If chesamcha means signet ring, say signet ring. And then psilcha. What does psilcha mean? Rashi says, it means simlascha sha'ata miskaseba. The clothing that you wrap yourself in. I don't understand. I know that psilcha, that if there's a long chaf at the end, it means yours. Obviously, Yehuda wasn't going to rob somebody else's clothes to give it to her. He was giving him what he had. So it should say psilcha. What should Rashi say? Simla. That's what it is. That's all. Simlascha sha'ata miskasa ba. The garment that you wrap yourself in. What do you need that kind of roundabout language?
But there should be no doubt.
Rashi is interpreting the words. What does the word chaysamcha mean? Chaysam means a seal. Chaysamcha means your seal. So say, that's it. Signet ring. And what does psilcha mean? Rashi says it means a wraparound. It means a cloak. Okay, so say simla. Say clothing.
It's not a thread.
No, it's not a thread. That's what the Kli Yoker says. It's connected to the word thread. And so the Rebbe says, this is what Rashi is trying to tell you. Tamar was a very smart lady. She knew exactly what she's doing. And she wasn't taking any chances. She needed to do everything possible to make sure that in the end, there would be no doubt that Yehuda was the perpetrator. So, since the purpose of Tamar was to make sure that Yehuda would fess up and be honest. Now, let me just say something. Before we know the rest of the story, when she asks for collateral, why is she asking for collateral?
For the goat.
Because she wants to get paid.
Yeah.
But if she wanted to get paid, why didn't she stick around for a payment?
It's not her goal.
Because that wasn't really her goal. What was her goal?
Get pregnant by Yehuda.
Her goal is to get pregnant and later to identify Yehuda as the one.
Right.
So her goal was never to get paid. If her goal was to get paid, anything of value would do, because the signet ring is more valuable than the goat. And so is the article of clothing, and so is the staff, or at least all three of them would certainly would add up to the value of more than a goat. So therefore, she'd make sure to get paid. However, the Rebbe tells you, what Rashi is explaining is that Tamar never wanted to get paid. She was looking for a different kind of collateral. What was she looking for? She was looking for something which is personal and identifiable. She needed to identify Yehuda. In other words, the way she presents herself is not actually what she's looking for. When she asked for collateral, he thought she said, make sure I get paid. What did she want? Make sure I know it's you. So because that was the case, move on. She wouldn't just ask them for ordinary collateral. Because if she asked for ordinary collateral, what will it accomplish? It'll get her paid, but it won't identify Yehuda as Yehuda. So usually when they ask you for collateral, what are they looking for?
Money.
A guarantee you're going to get paid. You know, you park downtown, and they say, give me collateral. And say, like, they want money. What if you don't have money? Give them the keys. Something like that. But here it wasn't just a question of, give me something of value. Here's a question of, give me something very, very personal. So I don't know of anybody who would give their license. The keys, mele, you know, you can make a police report the next day. The car is gone. But this is like really personal. And the reason was that she wanted things which are not just valuable, but dvarim, dafke ke'elo sheim yukarim loy bimyuchad, things which are of extreme value to him. This is what we would call the difference between monetary value and sentimental value. One is objectively valuable. One is subjectively valuable. One is because it's personal. She wanted something personal. V'lachein le'biksha tamar stam, just like any tabas. She didn't just ask for, give me a ring, because it's an artifact of value. Give me a shirt. Sharei tabas v'simleim chafetzim nefutzim she'eni yukarim li'hudim b'myuchad. Rings are a dime a dozen. Or if not a dime a dozen, $50 a dozen. But they're still available.
Is a cloak and the staff very unique?
The cloak, and that's why Rashi goes and explains. He biksha chay samcha. What's chay samcha? He didn't just ask for a ring. Your ring. Which ring? Your up close personal ring. Chay samcha sha'ata chay samba. The ring that you use. She wanted Yehuda's fingerprints. The fingerprint ring. And then she said, Chesami HaMiyuchid Shal Yehuda. V'asim Lascha. She didn't just want an ordinary garment. Because if she wanted to get paid, any garment would do. But she didn't want an ordinary garment. She wanted Sim Lascha Sha'ata Miskasaba. She wanted the article of clothing that is unique to you. Yehuda wore some unique clothing. He was different than others. V'loy HaBeged HaRagol Shalev Shnakel. Not the ordinary garment that everybody wears. She wanted the unique garment. Beged miyuchad shalavash Yehuda la'ish chasivis. Because Yehuda was, he wore special clothing that identified him as Yehuda. She wanted that article of clothing. So she asked for something very specific. So when he said, ma ha'iravein asher etin lach, what exactly would you like for collateral? What was her response? Her response was, chaysam cha upsilcha. And Rashi goes at length to explain how it's not just what he had in hand. That's why Rashi doesn't take the approach of Rabbeinu Miyuchas. Whatever, he took what was in hand. He talks about things which are up close and personal. Yehuda's personal things. Things which could be identifiable as Yehuda.
But these are things he had at the moment.
Yeah, he had them.
Yeah.
But it's more than just what he had.
Yeah.
She didn't ask him for what he had. She asked him for what would be identifiable.
He didn't have money. There's something very interesting here also.
He didn't offer money. He offered a goat.
But it's something very interesting here, and it's right.
People didn't carry cash once upon a time.
Yehuda, he went to take care of his flock, right?
Yeah.
So it's very odd that he took his ring.
That is pointed out by the Mefarshim. They do suggest that why did he have his ring when he wasn't going to do that? That's why Lemedesh Seichel Teif says it was stuff that was sheep-related.
Right.
So it was good for her that he had his ring on.
And how she knew?
I guess she saw. She sized him up real quick. He used to be her father-in-law.
I mean, she lived in his house.
She lived in his house. She knew.
He probably went everywhere.
She knew. It could be Yehuda was one of these guys who doesn't leave house home without the, you know, his signet ring.
Because it's an American Express. How do you know? You might seal a deal when he's
right?
You know, so.
clearly he has it with him, right? For him to give it to her.
That's the whole point. She knew.
She knew, yeah.
She knew that, that exact, because she knew she was able to, she knew what she was asking for. V'lachein nakta tamer b'lashem psilcha. It doesn't say a simla. It's not about a shirt. It's psilcha k'de lahadgesh shemadu beged miyuchad akasher liyehuda. So the word psil, you asked me if it was connected to the thread, right? But it's really connected to the word fastening. Like, for example, there's a word later on in the Torah called tzomid pasil. Tzomid pasil means to be fastened or connected. In fact, Rashi says earlier the name Naftali is connected to being connected. He says, oh, Naftuli Naftalti. Now I've caught up. I'm neck and neck, so to speak, with my sister, Rachel said, right? I'm connected. So the idea of psilcha wasn't just an article of clothing. The Torah doesn't want to use language article of clothing. The Torah wants to explain to you that Tamar knew exactly what she's asking for, something that would be connected to Yehuda, hamevata es gdulase v'chashivase, something that would be identifiable with Yehuda's standing, with Yehuda's position. And now we understand why something that seems on the surface to be just extra words in Rashi actually is the crux of the story. That's exactly what Tamar was asking for. That explains to you how this whole thing was a setup. And in the end, of course, Zorach and Peretz are born, which they are the ancestors, or not they, but Peretz is the ancestor ultimately of Mashiach. So, how do you